The information service of WEFT coming up next is Disability Beat, followed by CU Progressive News at 6 p.m. And then stay tuned for lots of other great programming on WEFT. At the Art Theater this week, Miles Ahead is worth watching for Don Cheadle's strong work on both sides of the camera as this unconventional biopic attempts to capture the talent and challenges of Miles Davis in the music industry. The late night screenings this week include Midnight Special, about a father and son who go on the run pursued by both the government and a cult drawn to the child's special powers. The Decline of Western Civilization, from director Penelope Spheres, surveys the late 1970s Los Angeles punk scene with groups such as X, Black Flag, Fear, Germs, Catholic Discipline, and the Alice Bag Band. For all current dates and times, you can go to www.arttheater.coop/full-schedule. This hour programming on WEFT is sponsored by Common Ground Food Co-op, community-owned since 1974. Common Ground features organic local and regional foods, bulk foods, a salad bar, deli, and more. For details or to find out about upcoming classes, call 217-352-3347 or visit commonground.coop. Today's Disability Beat is sponsored by our community partner, Jets Pizza. Jets uses only premium ingredients, including dough made fresh daily. Jets Pizza stores are located at 512 South Neal Street in Champaign. Their number, 217-352-3333. And 1907 West Springfield Avenue, their number, 217-352-9992. You can order online at jetspizza.com. Disability Beat is also sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law at 217-384-1111 for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana, with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat.
My name is John Welch from Eden Supported Living Facility. You're listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Thomas Yurkovich, Executive Director of the Division of Specialized Care for Children at the University of Illinois. But first, disability news for the week of May 9th, 2016, from Disability Scoop and Inclusion Daily Express. As the U.S. Department of Education fielded a record number of civil rights complaints last year, the agency said nearly half alleged some form of disability discrimination. The Education Department's Office for Civil Rights received over 4,800 complaints asserting violations of disability laws during the 2015 fiscal year, according to a report released last week. Disability issues accounted for the largest group of complaints logged, representing 46% of the record high complaints received by the Office for Civil Rights, which is tasked with ensuring equal access and prohibiting discrimination based on race, color, national origin, sex, disability, and age in education programs. While the overall number of disability-related complaints dropped slightly compared to the 4,900 filed in 2014, the Education Department said that reports of inappropriate restraint and seclusion, as well as issues related to web accessibility for students with disabilities, were both on the rise. The greatest number of disability-related complaints lodged last year hinged on the right to a free, appropriate public education, followed by complaints of retaliation and those centering on exclusion or different treatment. Many complaints crossed over into more than one of the 18 categories of disability discrimination that the office tracks, the report said. Over the course of the year, the Office for Civil Rights said it successfully resolved more than 4,600 of the disability complaints received. In addition to responding to individual complaints, the Education Department issued 5 guidance documents in 2015 addressing disability rights issues in schools. When patients in South Dakota seek help for serious but manageable disabilities such as severe diabetes, blindness, or mental illness, the answer is often the same. With few alternatives available, they end up in nursing homes or long-term care facilities, whether they need such care or not. In a scathing rebuke of the state's health care system, the Justice Department said last week that thousands of patients were being held unnecessarily in sterile, highly restrictive group homes. That is discrimination, it said, making South Dakota the latest target of a federal effort to protect the civil rights of people with disabilities and mental illnesses outlined in a Supreme Court decision 17 years ago. The Obama administration has opened more than 50 such investigations and reached settlements with 8 states. One investigation into Florida's treatment of children with disabilities ended in a lawsuit over policies that place those children in nursing homes. With its report last week, the Justice Department signaled that it also might sue South Dakota. While the administration has received widespread attention for investigating police abuses and supporting the rights of gay and transgender people, the Justice Department has also steadily made their case part of its civil rights agenda. The government says that those efforts have allowed more than 53,000 Americans with disabilities to leave institutions or avoid them altogether. It is a small number compared with the 250,000 working-age people who are estimated to be needlessly living in nursing homes, but advocates say the federal campaign has had significant effects. Most people with autism who receive vocational rehabilitation services exit the program with a job, a new report finds, but such employment is typically part-time and low-paid. Nationally, about 60% of those on the spectrum left the federally funded vocational program with a position in an integrated workplace that they'd been able to maintain for at least 90 days, according to a review of the U.S. Department of Education data conducted by researchers at Drexel University. In 4 out of 5 cases, however, the work was part-time with median earnings of about $160 per week, the report found. Most commonly, individuals with autism were working in an office or administrative support role. About a third of individuals participated in supported employment where the government provided on-the-job supports, but it's unclear from the data whether participants were able to maintain such assistance after exiting the program. The numbers offer a snapshot of the impact vocational rehabilitation, the largest public funder of disability employment services, is having on those with autism, a group that is increasingly seeking such services. Between 2009 and 2014, the Drexel report found that the number of people with autism who applied for vocational rehabilitation doubled to more than almost $18,000. 18,000 people. Of those, about 68% ultimately received services. Paul Shattuck led the research produced as part of the National Autism Indicators Report series, and he said, quote, unemployment is a critical issue facing people on the spectrum who have valuable contributions to make, but not enough opportunities to have work. Anything we can do to understand the support systems that are in place to secure employment for adults with autism will enable us to better assist this population in the future, end quote. And finally, more resources are available in the state of Washington to help transition adults with developmental disabilities from Washington's 4 state-run institutions to community settings. Some attribute that change to a local investigative news series titled Last of the Institutions. Station KING Channel 5 in Seattle began airing its investigative series in November. The series detailed how people living even with severe disabilities such as autism and cerebral palsy can thrive outside of the confines of state institutions for people with developmental disabilities. The report highlighted how Washington lags behind much of the country by continuing to operate 4 institutions. Said Charlie Lakin of Minneapolis, one of the country's most respected researchers in the field, quote, to see them as sort of a different species who would want to live their life in a way that's different than the rest of us want to live our lives is unfortunate and frankly discriminatory, end quote. 2 months after the series began, the Washington State Department of Social and Health Services made a policy change to help people move out of institutions. Supported living agencies that assist people with disabilities to live in regular communities received a notice from the state alerting them about a new funding source to help them gear up to take on clients who present with extreme challenges. Since the series began, there's been a change of heart for some who previously weren't considering moving their relative out of a residential habilitation center. A state-funded program to help families make this transition, the Family Mentor Project, has seen its enrollment skyrocket by 400% in the last several months. And that's the news for this week. Well, I'm buzzing. Yes, I'm buzzing. But my heart won't let me down. It'll be all right, darling. Won't you come around? Won't you come around? You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today by my guest here in the studio, Thomas Yurkovich, who is the Executive Director of the Division of Specialized Care for Children right here in Champaign-Urbana at the University of Illinois. Welcome to the program, Thomas.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So why don't you start out by introducing yourself to the listeners and let them know a little bit about your organization and what you do.
Great. I appreciate that. The Division of Specialized Care for Children. People often will ask me, hey, Tom, what are you doing? Where are you at? It's a mouthful to say, well, I'm with the Division of Specialized Care for Children, mm-hmm. otherwise known as DSCC. We help many families throughout the state, at any given time, about 7,000, who have children with chronic physical conditions that are amenable to treatment, and we'll help with care coordination, and we can get into that a little later, exactly what those services are. And in some cases, we can help with financial assistance, again, based on the income level of the family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an old program. We don't like to think of ourselves as old because we're continually looking at our structure, making sure that we're as modern as possible, evolving with the way healthcare is delivered today. But our origins are from 1937. So we're going to be 79 here this summer. We were created as a result of the Social Security Act. How old is this? Of 1935, where money was sent to states to deal with, I think the term was crippled children at the time that they used. And so the monies went out to the state. It's now part of a federal block grant that mm-hmm. still comes to states. And each state in the District of Columbia has a program, a children with special health care needs program. The one in Illinois happens to reside with the University of Illinois and has since 1941 when it was placed there.
So there are several offices, though, around the state. Are they
That's
all
correct.
Connected to the University of Illinois?
Yes, we have 12 regional offices, and I should, just for slight clarification, technically we're the University of Illinois Chicago, although we're University of Illinois, because it was with the medical center years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was, again, there was more direct care. So we have a few offices in Chicago, but we're as far south as Marion. We're in Olney, Illinois, over in St. Clair near St. Louis, Rockford, Champaign, Peoria, Springfield, and many points in between. And it is all linked under the same program, and it's part of the University of Illinois system.
So why don't you give a couple of examples of why families might be interested in contacting DSCC?
Okay. One is just purely informational. We like to think of ourselves, and we try to maintain a current knowledge of services and resources that are available statewide. And I like to say with our team members, for example, in Olney, you must be the experts here. The ladies, and there's a gentleman there that work in Olney, you're the experts of everything that's going on in these areas, these counties that are within your charge for not only medical care, but social service care as well. And so everything from know where the food pantry is. Many of these families have stress and have other financial issues. So we're there to at least be able to offer up to them, here's where you need to go, or we can contact someone for them and help them. Primarily, it was a medical program, and it still is. Again, it's bound by kids who have these certain, which we can get into, chronic physical conditions. But there's more to that than just making sure that there's a treatment plan in place. Do you know, can you get to the doctor's office? Do you know when your next appointment is? It's not a one-size-fits-all. Certain families need more assistance than others. And by assistance, I don't mean just financial. I mean assistance carrying on the day-to-day family routine and dealing with the youngster with special needs.
So most kids that you serve are between the ages of?
They're 0 to 21. And the vast majority are 0 to 18.
Mm-hmm.
So we did have a number of 18 to 21-year-olds. And we still do, but not as much because of the expansion of the federal health care, the Affordable Care Act. Some of them now have been able to access other forms and or the Medicaid expansion. Previously to that, if you were 19, 20, or 21, there weren't a lot of options for you because you had a pre-existing health condition and you weren't eligible for Medicaid, and no one was really going to insure you. So we were kind of one of the only games for them at the time. But with the expansion under ACA and the state's Medicaid, a lot of those folks now have medical coverage through another program.
And I imagine working with that age group of kids that a lot of your work is done in conjunction with school districts, is it not?
That's correct. Again, if the families, we never impose ourselves. We work with the families to make sure that the plan, because it's their family, it's their child,
right,
that the plan of care is agreed to by everyone. And a lot of times with these youngsters, they will have individual education plans, IEP. And if the family requests that our care coordinators accompany them to the meetings with the school administrators, we're more than happy to do that. We have a number of families where English may not be their first language, and so we do have bilingual staff that can help, again, interacting with schools and or medical providers.
So when should the families that are out there listening and they have kids with maybe some medical conditions that would qualify, how do they know whether or not that condition qualifies to be served by DSCC?
There's a number of ways. One is just we ask people to call us. And I can repeat this number throughout, but there's an 800 number, 800-322-3722. It's 800-322-3722. And they can call that, and that will direct them to somebody that can help them. We'll find out where they live and then get them to the correct regional office. You can go to our website, which is, and I can give these codes again later in the day, but it's dscc.uic.edu. And on the website, there's some tabs that'll say, like, do I qualify? I encourage people, don't just use that as their only guide, because some of these, over the years, there's been an accumulation of rules that have happened. And, and I would rather have them call us and let our folks who deal with this on a daily basis make the determination. On the website, there are 11 broad categories that are covered. Again, they're physical in nature. The largest singular category is diseases of the nervous system. So that encompasses a lot. But a lot of people knew us in the past because it was cleft lip and cleft palate.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would, we still have a lot of youngsters, you know, that fall into that area. Craniofacial anomalies, heart cardiac impairments, eyes. Again, not just seeing. Seeing doesn't count, but if there's physical problems with the eye beyond just regular refractive care, speech, hearing. I always think of major body functions, except for anything within the intestines that's been omitted over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But call us, go online and take a look. But I really do encourage them to call us, and we can help them in determine if the condition qualifies for care coordination and or financial assistance. And if not, when we know what their condition is, we could help get them into the right service or resource that they would need, depending on where they live.
And if there are children out there who have dual diagnoses, such as, you know, they have a heart condition, they also have a developmental disability, will you also serve them?
Yes, many of our children, I guess the gateway into the program is the way the way it was created is through the physical, chronic physical condition. But a lot of our children do have multiple conditions, and so that we will help with the care coordination with view the child as a whole, not just, well, we'll help you with the pediatric side, but, you know, you have this other issue that I can't help you with. We will help on the care coordination for all.
Yeah, it sounds like a very holistic approach, yeah. Which is really unusual, I think.
Yeah, we're limited. And again, we're not really we're not even a secondary payer anymore. The program years ago was, again, a primary payer because it predated Medicaid. It predated Medicaid expansion. We're more concerned with helping families of children with special needs connect. That's the key word we use, help and connect to the services that they need.
There should be more of that than, you know, just limited to your organization. But I'm glad to hear that it's happening.
Can you
give a couple of examples of, you know, specific examples? Obviously, you can't use names, but
a couple of
stories about how people have been helped through DSCC.
Sure. And if I could plug the website again, there's streamers at the bottom of that website where families have consented to tell their story. And there's photos. And so there's no, you know, privacy violation there. But it's a couple that come to mind. There are many families, you know, with children with orthopedic problems that have ambulatory issues. And so I like to think of us as a gap filler. And so certain insurance plans do not pay for ramps and lifts, modifications to a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And this is federal money, federal block grant money that we use, and we will help, again, if the family is financially eligible, we will help pay for those kind of things. And some of the letters we get back and just testimonials and talking to families, I mean, it's a major, because they would have to, they had a, when the child ages, it's more difficult. The mom can't pick up a 14-year-old boy and carry him up two flights of stairs anymore.
Right.
And to get in and out of the vehicle with the proper child seats, make sure it's safe. Even the van with the wheelchair, you know, to help modify the vehicle to so that families can be, obviously be able to move about. And, you know, other stories, it just, that you hear from people that were pleased with our service and we're happy when we do surveys of families, the majority of people are very pleased with our services. We always have room to improve. But it's almost like it's a voice to listen to, and that's a lot of the feedback that we receive, that somebody on the other end is going to listen to me and sort through my problems, because, again, it's not just medical. There's other issues, and help get them to the right place. And so that's what I just say, thanks for listening and helping out as well. So.
I would imagine some of those families of younger children come to you and say, I don't even know what questions to ask.
That's true. People can, obviously you're overwhelmed, and especially in the case where it's a newborn and the child, you know, comes home. Anybody, when you bring home your child, it's overwhelming at first, and then when you add on, you know, that there's special needs for the youngster, it can be, it's an array. A lot of people, you know, you run through some training before you're discharged, but how much of that do you really remember? So we're there trying to help out, sort, organize. And again, we do family by family assessments to seek to use our resources in the best way. It's not a one-size-fits-all. We've moved away from that because every family has different needs. Some families don't really need us much at all. One of our goals is to make that family down the road be self-sufficient in the care of their child so that at some point they would say, you know what, we can handle this now. We don't really need your help to coordinate our resources or to find doctors that are close. Another thing that we do where families are appreciative is like understand their own private insurance, because a lot of them have it, and we would see issues where people would go out of network, which can be very costly if you're in a PPO plan or an HMO and you go out of network. But a lot of times these specialists, like these youngsters, will see 7 or 8 different doctors, and so some specialists may not be within the same network. So we help families with that, understanding their network and then understanding if they go out of the network, what could possibly, you know.
Right. And before we run out of time, sure. I know you said you have an event coming up in Effingham.
Yes. Thank you. It's our annual event, our annual conference. It's for transition. So this is, although transition takes place all through the life of anyone, this is geared towards 16 to 18 year olds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's October 27th and 28th in Effingham. And there's 4 main pillars of it. It's education, employment, community, and healthcare. So there's a lot of families will be there. There's physicians, there's providers, there's educators that will gather. And there's a phone number they can call. It's not up on the website yet, but it will be. They're still ironing out the details, but it's generally attended by between 600 and 700 folks. So it's
That's a pretty good-sized conference.
Good to register so that they get a you know, an idea of what to expect. In the phone number, it's Family Matters, and it's 866-436-7842.
Mm-hmm.
But that should be up on our website here within the month or so, where they can click, and I think they can register then for the transition. So it is, we've had a lot of feedback, positive feedback. It is a statewide event. It rotates. It moves around the state. I believe last year it may have been in the Naperville area.
Mm-hmm.
So, but this year for our market here in the Effingham area, and so there'll be more out there. And
so let's give the contact information for folks, the website, the phone number.
Great.
And so forth. And also the Facebook page, because that sounded really interesting as well.
Yes. I was talked into a Facebook page, and we've had a lot of success where parents can interact. It's a clearinghouse. Again, it just doesn't deal with conditions that we would work with. It's a great way to exchange information. And we've had over 58,000 unique visitors in a very short time period to the Facebook. So what they can do, how they get the Facebook, is hit our website, which is dscc.uic.edu. And I encourage them to look through the website as well. And then down on the bottom lower left, there's a little Facebook icon or emblem, and they can click on that. It'll take them to the Facebook. And that's updated multiple times a week. So we keep it fresh with stories, and I think that's been we've had a lot of just really good response from that. And then our toll-free number again is 800-322-3722.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today, Thomas Yurkovich of the Division of Specialized Care for Children at the University of Illinois.
Thank you.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com, or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas for guests or topics to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Hope you have a great week.